Always waiting on Ben.
Yeah, I know, I know.
This is the Meteor Club Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about all things Meteor.
Hello, Meteor fans, and welcome to another podcast for the Meteor Club. Today, we are talking about gaming and Meteor. How does Meteor become the engine behind some games, or the reactive database handling stuff of games on the web? Well, we're going to figure all that out. Josh and I have no idea what we're talking about.
I play games. Does that count?
I play games with my kids. So what we did was we invited some professionals here today. With us today, we got Aaron from Void Alpha, and we have Matt and Justin from Moon.co. So I want to start off with you, Aaron. Could you tell us a little bit about Void Alpha, your experience, and what made you come to this podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us, Ben and Josh. And so my experience, I've been making games for about 20 years. Started back on the PlayStation 1 and so on. And so I've kind of had a chance to see the gaming industry change quite a bit. Obviously, mobile and web gaming are really hot areas. The way that we kind of came into the Meteor circle and kind of started to learn about Meteor was for a project that we had for a client that we were building that had some pretty specific needs. In particular, you play the game and then there's sort of a long, it's not quite turn-based, but there's sort of a long, you know, game mechanic. And then after an answer comes back and you find out how you did in the game, you want to get notified in real time if possible. So the Meteor reactivity was a perfect fit. You could stay on the page and you know, be actively playing the game and managing your character, and then you know, being notified as Meteor finished what it needed to do and things like that. So that was the springboard, and now we're looking into Meteor as a back end for cross-platform development, because it gives you an opportunity to write to a single API, regardless of whether it's mobile, it's on a console, it's on a PC standalone. We kind of feel like we're just beginning to scratch the surface of what Meteor can do in terms of accelerating game development. But those are some of the areas we're really interested in.
Cool. Well, hopefully we'll dive into more of those details coming up. Matt and Justin, tell us a little bit about Moon.co and what you guys are doing. Your little coming soon page is like blowing my mind.
well, that's just what it is. It's a coming soon page. So ours has been a pretty interesting journey, I guess. So give you a bit of background, like Justin and I have worked, I guess, in the digital advertising industry for, I guess, about a decade now. We worked together at an agency called Fantasy Interactive over in Sweden and then San Francisco, and then went our separate ways for about 2.5 years and kept in touch and talked about working together. And finally, when Justin moved back to the UK, we decided to set up shop like in February. We've spent the whole of this year kind of figuring out what we wanted to do, and that has changed quite radically as the year has gone on. Having worked with artists and developers and that kind of skill for like the majority of our careers, we decided to make a platform for artists, which was going to be Moon. And this game sort of come out of that through a competition, which I'll allow Justin to chat about.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the short version is that we entered this new business competition. I'll get to the media part soon. It was kind of X Factor style things and public voting. So during the first part of the public voting, we realized that we needed a bit of a stunt. Being a new company, we didn't have much of a following. So and our name being Moon, I think one day we kind of offhand said, why don't we just make a remake of Lunalander, make it multiplayer, kind of give it a bit of an update. We've been using Meteor up to that point just to do some of our prototypes for the platform. So we thought maybe it'd be a good way to sort of test Meteor in production, and also, you know, we get out of it this game, which would hopefully, you know, build a little bit of a following for the company in the meantime. So that was really why we chose Meteor in a sense. We didn't like look at all of the gaming tools out there and decide that Meteor was necessarily the best, but we knew that it was really good for these things that Aaron mentioned. Like we could kind of operate everything around Meteor. We could have our database and all of the front end stuff, the templating, kind of in the same, you know, engine as a game. So that was how we got to using Meteor for the game, and that was how we ended up with the most over-the-top holding page.
How long of a little project did this turn out to be?
Well, I guess we kind of astonished ourselves when we were like figuring out all these statistics. This is week 12 of working on it, so 3 months we've spent on it, I guess.
We've kind of been on and off. I mean, the first version was actually we said like let's just do a weekend hackathon, and we got something basic running in a few days.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, when it came to actually like playtesting it, improving the gameplay, getting the multiplayer part of it fairly solid, doing some testing on Meteor.com and just like seeing how it might behave in production.
Yeah.
I guess all of that like just began to snowball. As you well know, with most projects, you know, the kind of final 10% or 5% or 2% or whatever ends up taking most of the time. So we've kind of been in that final 5%, it feels like, for the last month.
Yeah, so we're going to be rolling out what we're calling like version 3 probably sometime next week, which we can talk about in a second. But yeah, I guess it's kind of been three main chunks. The first one was building this game in which we integrated the voting, which Justin touched upon earlier, into the game mechanic. So for anyone who's not familiar with how Lunar Lander works, it's like a round-based game where you start off with 1,000 units of fuel. You have to land your little buggy on the surface of the moon. And as you're using the thruster, it's decaying the amount of fuel that you have. So you might maybe use 200, 300 units of fuel for your first landing. And you keep on going and going until you run out of fuel. And then whatever fuel that you've accumulated, whatever score you've accumulated during that round, that's your final score. And so for the original version of the game, to try and incentivize people to vote for our pitch and help us through this like new business competition in the UK, we were saying for every vote that we get on our pitch, we're adding an additional unit of fuel to the game. So we get 500 votes, then everyone gets to play with 1,500 units of fuel as opposed to the base 1,000. But when we found out that we didn't get through to the next round of this new business competition, we had a game with no purpose. So we had to like repurpose it and strip out all of the quite complex like voting integration with this like third party competition, which is where like the Twitter following was, because we had this new Twitter account and we thought like we should probably build up our Twitter followers, hence being with Twitter and following us in exchange for a few goodies.
Very cool. Very cool. So has it paid off? Has it been a good experiment for you guys in Moon.co?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Like, I mean, we've had a load of fun, if anything else, like building this game. Like, it's been really, really good, certainly to learn a hell of a lot about Meteor, a hell of a lot about, like, game development. And this is our first time of, like, or first attempt at trying to run a startup. So it's been kind of interesting to push something out there that was broken. We pushed it out on Father's Day in the UK, which was, when was that? 21st of June, so about 3 weeks ago, we like launched it, and it was totally broken. And we spent like the following week like fixing all of the bugs, and we launched it on Meteor's like free app like solution, which launched it to Meteor.com, and we had like we think to be like throttling issues. So it would run fine for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and then suddenly like it would just grind to a halt where we think that our application, I don't know if you guys know about like how it's like free apps are throttled or how they work. But we've moved over to Scalingo since then because they offered a free month of free hosting. Mm-hmm. It's been really, really stable.
You've been happy with Scalingo then?
So far, yeah. It's been great.
Good. I mean, I think they're like one of like a relatively small number of hosts that like seem to have good Meteor support, and also like for us they have European data centers, so it's useful just like getting it up and running and testing.
Yeah,
they've been great. I mean, they're I don't know if you use them, but yeah, they're kind of the way you deploy is similar to, you know, Heroku and the like. You just like push up to a remote repo, it builds it all for you, demeteorizes it, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, so far, I mean, it's been pretty stable. So
yeah. And they offer Mongo for you guys too, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's, and they have at the moment we're actually still on the free trial, so that we can just like we can add, I think, like
different containers.
Decent, yeah. You know, you can have a few containers running. They give you like enough storage on Mongo, especially for us, because most of our we don't need much storage. It's like it's all ad hoc, so you know, like games are destroyed and players are, you know, removed and so on when they're not playing. So
I'm curious. So do they support AppLog? Because you guys are obviously using that.
Yeah,
I haven't actually set that up yet. Yeah, this is, wow. Yeah, we haven't, like,
we don't know what we're doing.
Tested it yet. This is why we're worried about when we like really start pushing this, like what's going to happen.
But, yeah, what's your highest, how many players, like we had three on just before the call, so how many have you seen at a time?
So we've had 200 concurrent users, like we've been jumping on and off the analytics, it's just integrated with Google Analytics at the moment. We've seen up to 200 people playing at a time. Justin's got it set up so that the rooms support up to 20 concurrent players. More load on the rendering engine, I guess, more so than the DDP data being sent down to the individual clients.
Yeah, so that gets to interesting technology. I mean, maybe I'm a little more cautious, but I've been designing games away from real time, and yet you guys dove right in with 20 physics-based, multiplayer. So, I don't know if now's the time to get in, but, I kind of set my own personal limit of, if it's more than about a tenth of a second, more frequent than about a tenth of a second, then I want that mechanic handled completely on the client. And that's how often I'm expecting updates from the server. Is that what you guys have seen as well?
We kind of knew this at the beginning. That was going to be one of our first big decisions about it's a small kind of casual game. So we didn't want people to cheat, but it wasn't a big deal for us. Obviously, if we wanted to really secure it, we would run everything on the server, and that includes the physics. But as you'll see with the multiplayer, you can see what each other are doing. You can't really interact. You can't collide with each other, for example. So it wasn't so important to have a really solid physics simulation in that respect. So yeah, the moment the client handles all of the physics, it just posts its position, velocity, and so on back to the server as often as it can, really. And then each other client handles interpolating where the other players are.
So I think we're pushing that data at a frequency of 50 milliseconds at the moment. So it's definitely not running at 60 frames a second, nowhere close. But it's just enough that as the data is being received by the server and sent down to all of the various clients that have that individual player in their room, then interpolation on that client. That's why if you've got a poor connection or if someone's transmitting data at a lower frequency, you see the ships kind of jumping around.
Oh, yeah.
When they're coming into land, sometimes it looks like they're going below the surface of the land and stuff. So it's not perfect, but it doesn't affect your own gameplay. It's more just to feel a bit more alive, and there's a sort of community going on there.
That's funny because that's dead reckoning. That's the stuff we've been dealing with since, real-time strategy games and, first-person shooters. You see people jump around in laggy situations. So it's kind of funny how there is never a magic bullet for some of these intrinsic problems, how do we get information from your machine to mine quickly? So that to me feels like that's why you want to design to the, to the platform. So in a way, I kind of feel good that you're experiencing that. I'm not playing it too cautiously that, if there were a multiplayer interaction between your ships, then you might have a big problem there because, it's like the old first person shooter. I shot you. No, you didn't. There's a disagreement on what actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's very true. We're adding bombs. So we wanted to, some of the feedback we got, and this is another kind of interesting thing about the project in general, because we just chucked this game up as a bit of a holding page, and now people are actually playing it and saying, gameplay wise, this could be better. What if we have this? So we thought, it's cool if you can actually interact with other people, but for these reasons that we're discussing, it wasn't really possible to have that happen on the kind of granular physics level. So we're going to put in bombs where at least all you really need to do is broadcast that, hey, a bomb is at this location and its start time is here, and all the countdowns will happen on the clients and people individually. So far we've tested it and that seems pretty solid, but that's about as far as we're going to go with that. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, on a meteor front, we got asked at the London meetup about how we were optimizing for it. Were we using a lower level socket connection and stuff like that? We haven't done any of that. We're just using it's kind of vanilla meteor. We've into a document allowing meteor to do its thing. We've got some low level subscriptions happening to manage the rooms. But other than that, it's everything is going through Mongo. It's working okay. So.
Interesting. That's an interesting question I'd almost put out to the whole group, which is, what's your killer feature for Meteor? I'll talk to clients and everyone's excited about the reactivity, but I feel like there are other solutions. You can roll your own solution for reactivity. Personally, we have a studio here. We've got, a dozen and a half people, depending on the time. And so for me, I'm looking for things more like, you know, maturity of the platform, richness of the ecosystem. Basically, does it let, you know, me and my team do our job better and faster? And so I like things like atmosphere, you know, the MDG, having met them a number of times, they're on top of stuff. It's not open source in the traditional open source way. So I guess for me, something like the fact that, you know, here we are talking about, you know, real-time connections between clients, maybe even circumventing or augmenting the Mongo stuff. And then you look in atmosphere and you got Arunoda doing Meteor streams and like somebody's already building it, you know? So I guess I would open it up to everybody, you know, I don't know. What do you, when you're talking to someone about Meteor, what do you describe as the killer app, or how do you describe it? What's exciting to you about it?
So the first thing I'll say is that Meteor Streams is deprecated, so people shouldn't use it.
Good to know. Okay. But it exists, and somebody else, you know, and someone else solved it, and then you get better.
Yeah. And so I think like Meteor Streams kind of pushed the op-log envelope, so to speak. So that was kind of interesting too. But the dark horse for me is the Cordova support and being able to build like mobile kind of native apps that are running on a phone. And I actually find the majority of my clients right now are interested in that, and that's what they want. And I think, you know, even with the advent of Swift, like it's still kind of expensive to get an iOS app built, and building something in 12 weeks that runs on two different platforms is kind of unheard of. And, you know, I've seen it done time and again now with Meteor. So for me, that's kind of the killer feature. And, you know, it's like you get the reactivity for free, and that's awesome, but some people don't necessarily care about that. So for me, it's definitely like the mobile story is going to be a very interesting one, I think, for Meteor.
Yeah. For our team, at least for me, I think the big selling point is the full stack integration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you don't need to think about. Meteor is trying to take care of a lot of things. Everything's written in one language. Developer experience, putting it together is faster. You don't get hung up on little things that you typically would be hung up on. And then when you pass off the product to someone else, you know, they have a nice solid set of code that already kind of has a standard built around it or a guideline system. And any Meteor developer can kind of jump into someone else's Meteor app and like start rolling right away. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's probably the big thing is developer experience.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, Ben. Like it's been amazing. Like this is our first real project using it. We started learning it, I guess, March, April time, something like that. Did a few prototypes and then dove straight into this project. It's just so refreshing, as you said, to have like that full stack set up there. Not have to worry about like grunt or gulp and build scripts, and then like this situation doesn't work with that. It's all taken care of. It's like opinionated. It's got like really, really good design patterns. Mm-hmm. And it's so incredibly consistent as well. It's just like the way that we've structured our application, like breaking in our implementation in the game, we've like broken like compartmentalized the application into packages. So we've got like a whole package for the client, one for the server, one for our collections, one for routing, one for the game. And so everything's like sandboxed, and that just works super well for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the stuff Ben just listed is what I usually go in when I'm making the pitch. It's funny because the reactivity is like glass. I also mentioned, you know, server side security. So, you know, if you need to secure something, you put it on the server, it's, you know, never even published, you know. And so it's kind of funny that, you know, you hear it in the press or the media, kind of the way people pick up on it. And it's too easy to knock over if your argument is, oh, it has reactivity. And then somebody can simply come along and say, so does, you know, my favorite framework X. But anyway, getting back to games, for me, one of the things that's helpful as we talk about community and rich support is I've looked into a number of game engines like Pixie.js and, you know, any SVG or Canvas engines. And one of the challenges you have is integrating with the game engine. So, you know, we've worked with Unity. We're really big fans of Unity 3D and have integrated that in a number of different ways with Meteor. I know you guys rolled your own. I know someone in the Montreal Meteor meetup is trying to work with Pixie.js, which is more like a Canvas and HTML5 sprite engine. And you go into Atmosphere and there's already a Pixie.js wrapper that somebody wrote. And so it's really nice that for gamers, I guess one message to get out there is the Meteor side is your sort of player management, inventory management, stuff like that. But then you need something else to do the front end, and there's already starting to be plugs to other systems, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because like that's the part that, like, I know how to build a Meteor app, but I don't necessarily know how to build a game. And so like I want to do an interesting product with my kids where, like, not necessarily a product, just a fun project, I guess, where we build a game or something. And I really have like no idea where to start. And I think like having some kind of framework like Pixie to help out would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's right. And we were actually chatting earlier about why, you know, why the Moon guys decided to, you know, roll their own versus using something else. Do you guys want to talk about that for a few?
Yeah, but before we do, I just thought I'd say, like, on the other side of things, Josh, like where you say you've got no experience of building a game, like neither of us has any real experience, like myself especially, with doing any sort of like back end work at all. Like, that is a massive Achilles heel. Like, you've done a little bit of stuff with App Engine, or we both have. We've touched on it here and there, but it's kind of a scary dark side of development. Like, we're sort of I guess more front end.
Well, it kind of goes back to what Ben was saying about the fact that, you know, if someone else were to come into this project now, or if we need to go back to this at some time, at some point, or if suddenly we need something on the server that isn't there, there's just it's kind of fluid being able to swap between the two and just like
yeah. I've definitely seen that, like, developers can, or designers, it's much easier for them to jump into the back end with Meteor. I've actually seen a designer build an entire product on Instagram and working with their API. And when he came into it, like, he barely knew jQuery. So, you know, that's after about a year of work with doing Meteor design work. Like, he was able to build an entire app on his own. So kind of impressive. Did you guys know Canvas beforehand, or was that your first time kind of working with it? Or
no, I've done a lot of stuff with Canvas before and with WebGL. I think, like, a lot of projects that we both work on, either professionally or for fun, kind of based around graphics or generative art or kind of interactive experiments and things like that. So the graphic side of it was fairly familiar, and I think that was why we, you know, to answer Aaron's question, why we started with vanilla, like Canvas. Probably in hindsight, had we not began this project as a kind of weekend hackathon, maybe we would have considered more like what engines there were out there. That part was really familiar. And that was another reason why Meteor was so good, because it was, for the rest of the stack, we could just start with everything as Meteor has. You know, like Matt mentioned, like the build system, there's a place to deploy it to for testing. Mm. We've got a database, we've got like communication, reactivity, we've got templating. Mm. So like having all of that to start with, and then like hot swapping things as we needed, trying different packages out, adding and removing them, rolling some stuff ourselves. It was much easier to kind of like build that up because we had a really strong framework to start with.
Aaron, like, you got more experience, I think, with and a grasp on all the physics engines that are out there for gaming and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And they're probably working on stuff for reactivity and real-time stuff as well to some point, right?
Not so much. You almost have to pull apart the different pieces of the games like that we're talking about. And client server is a pretty good, you know, cut point. So when you say, you know, game engine, I think of things like Unreal or Unity 3D or Pixie.js. And then there's things like Marmalade or Corona, which allow you to write, same kind of story. You write your game in HTML5 or Python or whatever, and then you send it off to a cloud build service, and it gives you back your wrapped native app, kind of like what Josh was talking about with Cordova. And so when you talk about game engines, they don't care as much about reactivity. What they'll provide instead is like a multiplayer layer and let your clients speak either directly to each other or to a server, but they're, you know, in different languages and, you know, kind of provide different things. What I kind of liked about Meteor, we've now integrated, if I think about the Meteor integration story, the simplest way to do it is to write your client, you know, directly in, you know, HTML5, make it a Meteor client page, and then you get kind of everything all packaged together. But you run into the problem that Matt and Justin ran into. You now need to take care of drawing the dots to the screen, handling physics, input, sound. You have to write the rest of the game engine, if you will. So many of us look for another thing to lump into that spot, and that's where the things like the Unity and so on come in. And even then, you're not quite done. We've integrated with Unity in two separate different ways, which I'll just throw out there because the audience might find it interesting. The first game that we did, we built the 3D part of the game in Unity and exported it. One of the nice things is about Unity is you can export out an Xbox 360 version or a PlayStation version or an iOS version or an Android native version. And one of the targets that you can build for is HTML5, a plugin. So we had a Meteor client page with a, you know, a DOM object that was a Unity player. So we had, think of it, you know, like a complex 3D game with smoke particles and sound effects and everything, like really good 3D gaming. And it's, you know, it's canvas underneath, but all of that is handled for us. Then what we did is built a pipe from that into the Meteor client page. So that was how we got reactivity and conversations with the server. So it was like this, you know, tower of Meteor server, Meteor client page, Unity 3D awesomeness embedded within that, talking to the client, which talked to the server. And that was a really compelling solution. And then unfortunately, what happened is that the, you know, because it requires you to install a plugin for your browser, it was just too much friction for players. So we don't actually do that anymore. But so our like next version was to build a Unity iOS DDP client. And at one of the dev shops, I did a 5-minute talk. I can find the video for you, where I had a native iOS client, which I built in Unity and exported to my phone, talking through DDP to the server, which then had updates reactively on, you know, on a plain old Chrome, you know, browser page. So that was a far more compelling like integration point. And so I'm interested to see where gaming goes, and we really want to publish that. It's just not quite ready for prime time. But what that will do is allow the large group and community of indie gamers who are working with Unity 3D to then quickly use Meteor as their backend for stuff like we talked about before, you know, user account management and backing up the database and, you know, all that other stuff you have to deal with if you're running a large online game. But you get the awesomeness of Unity 3D's, you know, game engine and compelling graphics and so on. Yeah, there's just a brief history of sort of, I guess, in answer to your question of are they working on coming together? And that's the thing, I don't think they are. You know, Meteor does something and game engines do something and they don't really have much desire to come together on their own, which is good for me because it lets me be an expert at bringing them together, and, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah. And that project that you're talking about, was that the one that you did for DARPA?
It was, yeah. So that was Stormbound, which is, alas, no longer online. It was a research project and really fascinating. And basically, by playing a game, you were helping to do science. You were helping to find solutions to problems. And so that was the one we talked about at the beginning, where you would play a level in the game, and we would have to send your solution off to a kind of piece of big iron math server that would basically verify that my solution was correct and then give me, you know, a thumbs up or thumbs down kind of a thing. And that's where Meteor was perfect. So, yep, you got it. That's the one.
In the like sort of Meteor side of things, something which you may or may not find quite interesting about the sort of interface build of Moonco is how we used Iron Router and like the Blaze templating engine. For anyone who's been on the game and has gone between the various menu systems, you might have noticed there's a lot of kind of fancy transitions and animation of the various like buttons and lines kind of animating in and out, like as you're switching between the game and the leaderboard and all of that kind of stuff. To achieve that, I'm using Iron Router to handle all the routing on the application, but I'm not switching out templates. So I'm actually just rendering the same template for every single route, and then have my own sort of display implementation running under the hood, which is like hooked onto the route changes. I don't know if anyone's like tackled this problem before, if there's like packages available on Atmosphere. Like we did have a look at using Flow Router, but that's a package which I'm probably going to wrap up and add some a README and stuff to, because I think it's quite interesting for anyone who hasn't got like a really, really heavy interface and you're like rendering out like a massive table or anything like that. But if you've just got like a few views here and there and you want them to have nice transitions between them, it also helps with our frame rate. You don't get any sort of like jank, like as the template is being rendered in and out. So that was, I guess, kind of an interesting solution.
Yeah. It's interesting. I guess what you were saying, Aaron, about using Unity and embedding a game engine in Meteor. It seems like it's sort of in the same sphere as people writing these bindings for React or for Angular or for Famous and stuff like that. Like, the rendering solution can be sort of fairly independent and you can still reap the benefits of the rest of the Meteor ecosystem. So whether that's a full-blown game engine sitting inside of it or just like a relatively simple kind of way to deal with the routing or the rendering. Like, I mean, ours is kind of where your Unity view was. We just have canvas, but it kind of amounts to the same thing. You know, there's like some hooks going into that for the reactive stuff, and then the rest of it is just Meteor. And I think really appalled with the way that we did it anyway, because there's sort of tracker functions and stuff happening deep in the game engine.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like how Meteor is, or at least the community is making these DDB clients. It's lining us up so that Meteor could just be like the de facto admin backend for like everything out there, whether it's a mobile game or an enterprise app or a full out like startup serving the public. Right out of the bat, like reactivity, we were talking earlier, like reactivity probably isn't like the number one seller that we like try and get it. And I think that's just because it's expected nowadays. Like, it's the standard. And admin dashboards and just the back end and management and support, it's just expected to be real time. You know, if someone's on the screen with a support rep.
I definitely think like thought process is leaning that way, right? Like, the general consensus is like, we need to get real time now. But I still think like there's a lot of people that aren't there, or they're going to take a long time to kind of build it themselves. If you look at, like, you take Rails 5, for an example, like, it's still going to be a while before that comes out and they're going to add it. And my guess is, like, it'll probably be a little painful to get it working correctly, because they're not shipping data over the wire. They're shipping HTML, from my understanding. I agree with you. Like, I love DDP, and I think it's a great, like, connection flux point. And so then, like, you can change out the back end if you need to. You know, Arinoda is doing interesting things with replacing Node and the Meteor back end with a Go process that's serving up DDP. So that becomes very interesting. And all of a sudden, we can have a JavaScript fronted client that has a Go kind of back end and can scale in a different way than Node might. So I kind of love that part of the story.
I think it's kind of interesting to find how we're all kind of centering around the same types of, you know, problems. And you know, a lot of people will start a company or will ask for funding or whatever. I kind of hear it in the Bay Area here about, you know, oh, we're going to use, you know, gamification, and we're going to learn UI from games and stuff. And it's funny because, you know, Matt and Justin just brought up one of the most important ones. In a game, things are not instantaneous. You know, making a selection, you know, the button presses and then particles come out and then there's a fade. And so those are the kinds of things that I'm glad to hear you guys are working on, might even publish that, because it's, you know, it's one of those things that's basically often overlooked and yet is a problem in every game. So if I load my game or choosing a new scene, how do we get you from A to B in a cool and rewarding and juicy way? That's the term in games, right? There's a lot of juice on stuff. Another one that we run into, and we were talking about it before the call, was guest versus registered players. And that, I think, applies to every Meteor app. In the end, you want to invite someone in, show them the value proposition, but then when they come back after registering and they return to what they were doing, you can't forget what they were in the middle of, or it's like, oh, forget this, I'm not doing it again. We ended up having to write our own, or we chose to, I don't remember what was available at the time. This was like Meteor 06 something at the time. You know, we would set session cookies, and then they would actually have to go to a third party site, because we were part of a larger portal, register, agree, say they were 18, do all this like legalese, then come back to our game, which was on a totally different server and a totally different domain. You know, we'd have to do OAuth back to the main site, say, is this really them? And then put them right back into whatever tutorial they were already on or something like that. That's one of those things. I would love for there to be a package that says, you know, here's me, here's my ID. Just try to remember where I am so that every time I come back, you kind of, whether I'm registered or what was registered last time or signed in through Twitter or not, there's a lot of problematic flows in there. And it definitely applies to games and probably to other apps too.
Yeah, I'd say even other apps, because I've been working on Reaction Commerce lately, and they have a very similar thing where they're tracking essentially a session, and then like you can add stuff to your cart, and the session's going to track your cart, and then when you become like a logged in user, you have to be able to flip that cart over to be associated with that user, so then they can continue shopping and purchase and that kind of thing. So very similar. I wonder actually, like, they've got a lot of code. I wonder how much could be kind of abstracted out of there and, you know, turn into something.
It must be like if there were a collection where you could store things that come with, you know, kind of thing or something. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
But that's key in today's, you know, you guys were asking me about, you know, how things changed in the game industry and, you know, with free to play, and I'm not going to go into my personal soapbox about that, but that's the reality is there's a lot of river flowing by, a lot of people who come check out your game for 15 seconds. And the ones that you catch, you know, you really have to like make sure they don't bump into anything. Yeah, you have to let them play and try it out first. You can't put any friction in their way.
Yeah, actually, going back to the kind of storage stuff you're saying on maintaining states, whether people are logged in, logged out, whether they like come back to the game or not. I mean, when we looked into trying to, well, we thought maybe speed up some of the game communication between client and server by doing something a little bit lower level with the WebSockets, and we did look at the streams package actually. We realized that if the benefit that Meteor had using Mongo to actually store all these things and using the collection, whatever database you ended up using, was that if something happened, the server needed to restart, something hung, whatever, there was some kind of memory issue. We were just using kind of like off the shelf WebSockets, we would have had to manage all of that stuff, like dumping what was happening to a store somewhere and like retrieving it when the connection comes back and all of this kind of stuff. Whereas actually, yeah, with Meteor, it's really seamless. And we can do exactly the same thing, like track a player from the moment they connect to the moment they leave. And if they log in during that time, that's fine. That whole transition can be very seamless. You just like put all of that in the player document and it's done.
So that's interesting, because that to me goes back, you know, before games, I was like a, you know, Unix sysadmin and a Sybase SQL database administrator, and it's all that stuff it's like critical that the transaction, it's very transactional, right? Either the whole thing happens or nothing happens. And you brought up things like, you know, we hit scale or we run into a memory issue. The side effects of that can range from it doesn't really matter, like, you know, your game comes back up and you're in about the same place, to the player spent money on an in-app purchase but something went wrong and you've charged them but not given them something, or vice versa. Is there, you know, that's another gaming problem. Is there a package or something that allows for a sort of transactionality and rollback and stuff like that?
We're using GroundDB, which is, from what I understand, like a layer over the top of like the Mongo collections, which needs interactions with like the mini Mongo in local storage. Am I right in saying that? So that when you go offline and lose internet connection and then you get connection back, it's able to queue those up and sync those with the server. So, I mean, that was just, you know, just literally going and doing a find the replace with like Meteor.collection with like ground.collection or whatever the name is. And it's those sort of packages, like going back to accounts and like reducing all of this friction that you talk about. Like, that's what's really, really made Meteor so amazing for us. Just there's some terrific packages out there that we don't have to work, like bother spending all of that time, because someone's done such an amazing job with it already.
Now, did you guys say that you're going to be using Meteor for your startup as well?
Yeah, definitely. Funny enough, we're a bit of a crossroads at the moment. Like, when we push this game out next week, and we've got the bombs in there, and we're working with a company called Planet over in Sweden to have some music and sound effects, which is all generative, like using the Web Audio API. And
they made like an old school like 8-bit synth and sequencer for it.
Nice.
Awesome. Yes.
So when we push that out, we've like restructured the reward system. So we've like cut the follow us, and then everyone gets one unit of fuel. We're basically giving full access to the whole world, which I've designed straight out the bat. So you can like do a number of things. There's like three rewards available. Like, you can register, which is what we're talking about earlier. Just hand over your email address. You can share it on Facebook or Twitter, or you can fill out a really, really simple poll, which is going to give us a little bit of feedback about, because everyone that we've shown the game to who likes it, and we've had people playing it for literally hours, like some of the analytics we've got is crazy. Like, I think we had one guy on there for like 6 hours straight or something like that, which is kind of mental.
He's right in this room right here, like Josh Owens.
So I definitely log like at least 3 hours on this game. I've got like a time tracker on my machine that gives me a report every week, and like total time over the last couple of weeks is probably somewhere around 3 or 4 hours.
That's very flattering. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, we're considering, you know, taking this to the app stores or like possibly to one of the console arcades, like Xbox, whatever. So we're integrating a really, really simple little poll into the game, and you know, like, where would you like to see this? Like Android, iOS, or Xbox, PlayStation, PC, Mac?
So your landing page sign-up thing has now become your business, you're saying?
Yeah, like, we're seriously considering turning this into, like, a proper game, just because, I mean, it's been online for 3 weeks now, and we've had, what, like, 75,000 games have been played or something like that. That's, like, wow. 20,000 a week. We haven't really, like, shouted about it very much at all. We were waiting until we'd sort of stabilized it. We launched it on Facebook, like did a soft launch, just said like Happy Father's Day like 3 weeks ago, and did a few tweets from like our Moon account, and it's kind of, I guess, got a bit of, well, quite a lot of organic growth. We're hoping with this new reward system, what we've been talking about, reducing the friction and all the rest of it, that we should see a bit of viral growth, but we shall see.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I remember like the first time I saw it, it had hit Crater, and I'm sure you had probably quite an influx of people at that point too.
Yeah, is it Rich, Richard Lay or Lee?
Yeah.
He's like one of our serious players. Like, I think he's like top. He was top of the leaderboard for a while, but he put in some serious hours.
We added this TV mode so you could go onto the site and just like watch other people playing. And yeah, we stayed up pretty late one night watching Richie play.
Yeah, for hours, really going and going and going for the Space Invader landing spot.
So anyway, it brings up all sorts of other interesting questions about gaming, because it was meant to be, it was almost a joke, you know, that we made this. It was a bit of fun. And now, yeah, we're kind of on this threshold where it's like, do we start like thinking more about what a game like this could do? Like, do we, you know, take some time off to like remake some of it and add some more serious mechanics in and make it a bit more playable, or do we just kind of just keep it simple? But I'm sure if we were to do the former, we would run into a lot of the things that we've experienced, Aaron, when it comes to...
Well, maybe that's an interesting question, right? So, like, how are you making money now, Aaron?
that's where I kind of wanted to go too, I feel like we just stumbled onto another benefit of the Meteor story, which is there's this huge community. Well, it's a good sized community, and everyone in it is super positive. So when somebody has a little bit of success with a Meteor app or story or something, everybody, you know, wants to clap each other on the back. They'll promote. I think there's like this, like just the right mix of like, of like insecurity, like, did I choose the right framework? You know, I need this to win. Look, it's winning over there. Maybe it'll win for me. But really, it's, you know, it's good natured, like, wow, that's awesome. Great job, you know? And so, you know, these days, again, with free to play, and, you know, I'm an old fart when it comes to this stuff, and I can't stand free to play and the user acquisition model, but it's the reality of where the business is going. And, you know, I have to monetize players at a certain rate so that it costs less to acquire them than I make off of them. And I hate that model. And yet here's two guys who built something and they got a bunch of audience for free because of the Meteor story and the people who were excited by it. You kind of can build a game, build your concept, and get proof of concept from a good sized audience without the investment of, you know, a $5,000 ad spend on Facebook, which even that, is it even worth it? So you kind of get this sense of how we're making money. We're mostly a service business. So we do a lot of stuff for clients. We work obviously for DARPA and research organizations. We also did a lot of work on Star Citizen, which is the MMO space MMORPG that had a hugely successful Kickstarter last year. So a lot of sort of service business. But our internal stuff, what we're starting to go to is actually VR. And I'm really interested to see what like an Oculus Rift game with a Meteor back end to bring reactive universe to, you know, to the world. So that's yeah, that could be cool. So
or like a new level of chatting with people.
You could just go there. Exactly. You know, the Meteor chat app a la Rift, you know, so it's like Second Life all over again, but hopefully way better. no dig on that. That was a hugely successful thing, but yeah, so that's where we're starting to go is, I really want to get a big back end stood up where our audience, you know, can leverage the, you know, once they become a fan of our games, they've got an account on our Meteor server. And then as new games come on, you know, they're kind of growing their relationship with us. And that's a big part of why we want Meteor in there is we don't want to make games where somebody comes along, we get, you know, a 14-year-old who plays the game for 3 minutes and then throws it away. Like, those users are not an audience for me. I want to build a relationship. I want to earn your trust and then get you excited the next time we come out with a game, that kind of thing. And the Meteor, you know, so building a community or a forum webpage on top of it. And, oh, it already knows who you are because you played our game. You know, that's more the cohesion that I'm looking for from my gaming backend.
So you're going to use Meteor to like kind of make a user platform.
We actually have another strategy game for, we're still figuring out exactly what we're going to target, but right, sort of like a turn-based strategy with a persistent world type of thing. And so there would be not only the game, you know, driven by it, but right, forums, you know, where you team up and make your guilds and talk about your strategy and so on. But also obviously, you know, the, in-app purchases, game state, stuff like that. And, you know, really glomming on to that one centralized thing.
Very cool. You can also like start up your own like authorization. So like if it becomes huge, other third-party developers, you know, they want to make like a forum or something like that.
Yeah.
Into the users.
Exactly. Big time. And even then going further from some of those kind of like housekeeping tasks, like, you know, user management, forums, messaging and so on, you know, customer support, all the way out to the game itself. So we have another game in development that is a very, very multiplayer mobile game. And if we, you know, my vision for that is that it makes it easier for people like Matt and Justin to build a game and write to one API that handles all of that stuff. Like, I'm at a, you know, at a restaurant, I want to know who nearby me is on right now and might want to play with me, that kind of thing. So geolocation and cross-platform, you know, if it's going through Meteor, I don't care if you're on an iOS, an Android, or even a BlackBerry, right? So you get a lot of cool stuff that way.
Yeah. Mind blown.
Yeah. That'd be super, super useful. I guess there's a question for everybody. Like earlier on, Josh, you mentioned that one of the big things for you regarding Meteor was like called over and being able to roll out your Meteor applications natively to like Android and iOS. And with regards to like the sort of freemium gaming model, like love it or hate it, I mean, what sort of integration, if any, is there for like doing in-app purchases? And also, Aaron, what's your experience with like using, if any, again, like some of these frameworks like Pixie going through Cordova, and what's the performance like there? Because for us, like we're considering technologies, if we do make this game a real thing, like do we stick to Meteor and go to WebGL, or do we like move to another technology like Unity? Mm. Or do we use a combination of both of them? That was several questions.
Yeah, there was one for everyone. Do you guys want to...
So I'd say for me, like I've only published to the App Store, so I'm not, or not to the App Store, to the enterprise clients. So I'm not really sure, like we haven't had to do in-app purchases because it's all been kind of corporate-ish stuff. And I think Ben's probably in the same boat with the stuff he's done so far. But yeah, I know that for sure Stefan Holhaus over in Germany, he's been actually working on a game called Walk of Claim, and it's like a physical game where you get your butt out of the chair and like walk in shape, and like it's an enclosing shape, and when you finish like connecting the lines all the way around your shape, you like claim that section of land and you get points for it. And so I know he's got like some in-app purchases that you can make there, and he's built the entire thing with Meteor and Cordova. So
well, it's like Kix on Google Maps. Do you remember the game? There was an old arcade game, QIX.
Oh, so there, no. Yeah, I didn't play that.
You basically draw circles or draw rectangles.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So in terms of just quickly your question about sort of in-app purchases, Pixie versus Unity versus so on, you touched on something earlier that Meteor lets you focus on the game rather than, oh, look, this DB call doesn't quite work the way I want with the front-end framework that I chose. And so Meteor erases that blackboard, which is the whole point, and lets you focus on what you're building. And so that's one drum we bang. The other one is Unity, because it has a very similar story. If you want to make an in-app purchase, there are people who write a similar, like a package system. And so in your game, you say, at this point, the player has chosen to buy, you know, in-app purchase X, and then it abstracts away for you, whether that's through the iOS App Store, through the Android Google Play Store, through whatever. And so again, I don't want to deal with that stuff. The first game that I released a couple of years ago was, before we got into Unity, I wrote it straight in, you know, Xcode with Cocos 2D, and I had to write the whole, you know, go off, call the Apple server, wait for the encrypted, you know, and that's time I'm not making the game better. So I tend to look for solutions where there's as rich an ecosystem as possible. Unity gets 2D or 3D. There's a lot of people who've solved some of the same problems. So that's kind of where I start. But it really depends, you know, what your goal is. If it's going to be a web game only, then Unity doesn't make the most sense at the moment. But I don't know. I don't know that a clear winner has emerged in the, you know, Canvas HTML5 like sprite rendering physics engine. There are a number of good solutions out there, though.
Fuzzy.
yeah.
Go on an experiment. Write a book.
Yeah. Because we all have tons of time to write the game 6 times and
Yeah, like you can always like do a DDP client, but then you're like losing all the front end stuff, really.
Yeah.
You know, and like the ground DB that you mentioned before and everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's like major trade-offs. You're right. There definitely is like a solid line in the ground. And you got to go one way or the other.
Well, if you choose not to, and you're taking only half the solution, then you're creating more, you know, cut off arteries than, you know, and problems than you're fixing possibly.
Mm-hmm. And that's the question is like, mm-hmm. which path is that? Mm-hmm. That's like causing the more work.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So that's a big question mark. Once someone answers that, I have a feeling like there's going to be that person's going to be in major demand.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing I mentioned them earlier, the Montreal Meteor group was going to do another meetup on games. So I'm actually building a prototype. I'm kind of doing what you guys just did. I'm building another game. I'm going to use Pixie.js just to try it. And so I'll actually have some info. So, you know, check that out. I think it's July 29th is when it's scheduled for, 2 weeks from today. 29th. Yeah, that sounds right. So more details to come, I guess.
Yeah. And I did a quick Google. Apparently this is a good measure. I don't know. But Pixie, JS, and Cordova do look like they will play well together. You just got to you can't rely on WebGL. If you do, then I think you have to have some other kind of plugins for Cordova to get it to work right.
Yeah. And a lot of the sprite engines do have a failover that if it can't do WebGL, it'll drop back to Canvas. And many of them also have all the way back to DOM elements.
Yeah.
So sorry, you were saying, guys?
No, I was saying actually one thing we found, because we kind of rolled our own and ran into a lot of these issues, which we were sort of expecting to have, but they were in areas that we weren't expecting. So we had, this is maybe a little bit of a fringe thing, but worth noting, like we, at one point we had a big canvas with most of the game running. So all of the landscape is drawn into that. It reminded me of like long ago working on an Amiga, like doing some some basic stuff, because we, like for the graphics, we had to do all of the like clipping ourselves to make sure that we were only rendering the like vertices we needed to, all that stuff. Anyway, so we thought the UI layer should probably be in the DOM. There was a whole lot of UI that needed to happen over the top. We could put it into the into Blaze and just have it sitting over the canvas, but I think that works perfectly on desktop, but on mobile we were just seeing a kind of really horrendous frame rate
drop. It's crazy.
Yeah, so as soon as, even though like we know kind of in theory, like you should avoid things like talking about Canvas specifically, using like fill text and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in the end, it was much faster to just rely on mobile, like a hardware accelerated canvas, and just with the minimal amounts of text we had, doing it all in Canvas, having no DOM over the top at all. Mm. And the frame rate shot up to 60 FPS. So
yeah,
that's something we weren't expecting, like doing more in the Canvas but avoiding this layering issue where
it's
Frankenstein, like it's quite funny. As soon as you go to the game, as Justin just said, like all DOM disappears but there's still interface there, so you've still got like the play, pause, restart, and then when we've got sound, like a toggling of the mute, and that toggle mute button is also going to be in the DOM. So for the rest of the application, like you'll be interacting with a DOM element using like the events, like through Meteor, and then as soon as you go to the game, like all DOM dies and everything's in the canvas, and that's
Yeah, it's interesting. You guys were just starting to catch up onto the big the elephant in the room, cross browser. We ran into so many problems with, you know, having to support IE, Safari, Chrome, Firefox. You know, some support the Zendesk attribute, some do not. Some support Canvas in the same way. The sorting was like nightmarish. And that's unfortunately like right squarely in the world of the game problem. It's probably something you can get around a little more with non-gaming apps because the demands are a little bit lower in terms of some things. You don't have to go as deep into, you know, we used transform matrices and all this stuff. And it's like, well, the support is really dodgy on some of this fringe stuff. Mm. So anyway.
Well, guys, the time has come.
To say farewell.
Yeah, we're just starting to dive into it. And then I'll be the bad guy and be like, you guys are awesome.
Not at all. Cool.
Yes, but, this has been super awesome.
It has. I'm pretty excited to see where it goes. I'm really glad, like you guys, that Josh picked to be the guest, because it's like everyone came at it in kind of like a different style to achieve, to use Meteor, and it added a lot of depth to the conversation. Aaron, I'm super pumped for the future, man. And I think you're going to be driving a big part of it. So
wish me luck.
Yeah, absolutely. And we definitely are looking forward to version 3 of Moon.co, man. We'll see where this goes, man. It sounds like you guys might have tripped over like a really big opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll waste 12 weeks of our lives.
I don't know. It sounds like there's a lot of innovation that needs to happen where you guys are heading. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff.
When that update goes live, we'll put it on Crater, so all of the media fans out there, you can see version 3 when it goes live.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I would really like to tap into your knowledge, your guys' knowledge, and what you did. I know that Aaron blogs on Void Alpha,
mm-hmm.
and your guys' blog, and like I'm wondering if Matt and if Justin, if you guys blog anywhere, like on Medium or anything.
Not at the moment, but yeah, we did get asked. We met some of the Meteor guys actually at a meetup in London. They've flown over some of the community members, and they were talking about the kind of outreaches that they were doing. One of them was case studies in production Meteor apps. So we have been talking to them. So maybe, I mean, there's probably room for maybe more of a development blog going on. But
yeah.
Also, I think the next thing maybe for us is just to package all of our learning so far into one big study and
yeah. What's that other game written in Meteor? Dominus?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like they have a Medium blog that they use and I like digging into like what they write. You know, mm-hmm. they're short and yeah. Anyway.
Chuckle, Josh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a backstory here?
No backstory.
Okay. Yeah, there's also was it Spyfall is a new one that was written on Meteor. It's if you go to spyfall.meteor.com.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there's like a whole
another 3 hours.
I know, really. So there's like I feel like there's critical mass where maybe there needs to be one blog where, you know, you guys share what you did or some, you know, we all just sort of contribute instead of there's the Dominus guy, here's Aaron on whatever, he's, you know, it'd be great if there were one place for gaming related Meteor stuff. Cause I do think it's got a life.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was thinking exactly the same thing. I think that's a great idea.
Not it.
Wow. Oh, dang dude. I was just going to nominate you.
All right. Well, Well, we got to, we just got to find a place and then everybody just start contributing to it, you know?
Yeah. Make like a Medium group.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
That'd be an easy way to do it.
Yeah.
So right on. So let's wrap up. So like at the end, we do picks. Basically, we show the world that we get out and we do more than just development. And we pick something out in the world that we think is awesome, someone or something. And we just like give a shout out to it. If we are real nerds and we don't get out of the office, then yeah, it's okay to like say something in the development world that's your pick. But right on, let's do that and then we'll wrap up the show.
All right.
Josh, I'm going to put you on
the spot. All right. So I'm going to go with the Mophie juice pack. If you don't have one of these, like I would highly recommend it. I picked one up in the airport and oddly enough, like, so I use it when I travel. It's kind of nice to have this little spare battery so I can plug in whatever device I've got. I'm using on the plane, like the iPad or the iPhone, and get that extra bit of battery life. But I actually found that my kids are terrible at charging their devices. And so, like, whenever we're going somewhere in a long car trip, there's always one of them that forgot to charge their device. So it's nice to have this along because I'll just be like, here you go. Like you can start charging your device and still use it at the same time. So it's been pretty awesome. Actually may at some point get like a bigger one to keep in the car or something, but this one's, it's about good for one phone battery charge. So
nice.
Pretty awesome.
Very cool. Very
Who's
cool.
Next.
Bom, bom, bom. I'll give these guys a few more minutes.
Right. I'll go too.
Oh, right on. All right, Aaron.
Okay. So I have a son who's in elementary school, and I've been working with them to put together a curriculum and a tech club, an after-school gathering place for kids to learn web page design, programming, and robotics, depending on what sort of section they choose and sign up for. And so I'm going to give a shout-out in particular to Scratch. Scratch.mit.edu. It's a kind of a visual programming language paradigm that makes it easy for, you know, kids to learn. It's almost like you stack Legos and that becomes your program. So it gets rid of all the cruft of syntax and lets them focus on semantics and algorithms. And it's very easy to make stuff. And it's not just good for kids. It's like I've shown it to, you know, my aunt who doesn't understand programming. And then she comes away and she goes, I kind of understand what you do now. So I'm going to give a shout out to all the people who make learning programming easier for kids, for adults, especially Scratch. If you want to get started and you know nothing about programming, there are some basics for you.
That's awesome. Now, did I see this before? Like, was it used to build Android apps back in the day?
Yeah, it's becoming like, yeah, you can then wrap it if you want. And actually, people are building interfaces to video cameras. It can do image processing. So you can place like a little virtual balloon and then use image processing to see when the child like pops it with their finger, when there's movement over it. There's people who have built an integration to Arduino and robotics, so you can use that to program a robot. There's integration with the Wii remote, so you can use a Wii remote or a Bluetooth device to control the game in a web page that you wrote with Scratch. It's like becoming a bit of a community. It's really awesome.
Oh, man. I'm going to do something with Wii. My kids are going to think I am like their life hero if I do that.
And with a Meteor backend, so it's multiplayer. Bang.
Oh, Aaron. Aaron. You just might have helped me knock off Santa Claus as their top favorite. That is awesome. I'm going to dive into this. Very cool.
Good luck.
Cool, cool. And my pick of the week is Josh's train. No. Oh, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, I would say ours is, we watched Ex Machina the other day. The film was out earlier this year. It will probably be less of a time sink than getting into Scratch and stuff. So you just have like a couple of hours and just chat that one out. That's a good kind of philosophical musing.
Yeah, we just watched that last night. That was an awesome movie.
Ex Machinima?
Yeah.
Ex Machina. It's very slow at the beginning, but then finishes with a sci-fi crescendo.
Yeah, it's kind of like I would lump in with that a series called Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, yeah, that was when I was in New York. It seemed to take a little while to come over and not everyone had seen it, but I'm glad that it's over there now.
Yeah, it is on Netflix, I think. Black Mirror is on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, and there's Humans now, too, if you guys haven't caught that.
Ooh, cool.
Which is pretty good.
I think I tweeted, I don't know if it was offensive or not, but I don't care. I think the best thing, oh, it's a spoiler alert. I can't say it. I won't spoil it. All right. Sorry.
All right. No one goes go to Aaron's Twitter account.
So on the theme of game development, there's actually a film coming out later this month, I believe, called Unity, which is a documentary about the Earth and humans.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Good segue, at least.
Yes, there you go.
Well, I'll have to watch that then, because like I was on the fence if I was going to watch Ex Machinima. I really wanted to watch it, and then it's just like, I don't know. I watched some previews. I was like, man, this thing's like all about just like, it's like a chick flick almost about relationships probably. And so I was like, if I got time.
Thinking cap. You got to go in the right mood, chilled out, ready to kind of let it go. But it's where cool. It leaves you thinking when you're done. You're like, huh, yeah, that's a good question.
Nice.
Well,
nice.
It kind of keeps you guessing too, like, you know, through the whole movie, like who's lying, who's telling the truth, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I didn't want to do. Like, I don't want a drama. I want to see like some guns, some blowing up. Like, I know who's bad. I know who's good. Let's like,
oh, okay.
Avengers.
People like this.
I'm an Avengers guy. Simple. Keep it simple.
There's a little action. Sorry, Ben.
All right. So like my pick of the week is, gosh, I got two of them that are like pretty awesome. I went out to like demo the new MacBook yesterday, and they're like nowhere in stock, which is like super annoying. It's like the base laptop of Apple, and you can't like get it. Anyway, I demoed it. I was blown away. I am blown away. It's thin. It's like amazing. And then I went home and watched a YouTube video of it, and I guess like the whole CPU and everything is like, the whole computer's like that big up by the speaker, and the rest is just batteries. It just blows my mind, and the performance out of it. So that is definitely my pick. I'm impressed. And then another one, I'm going to pick two. Look at my hair. That's crazy. What is this? No Bad Ideas, Headwear Counterculture. Dude, this hat is awesome because, I don't know if you guys can see it. Oh, look, it has a wallet inside it. Oh, man, it's totally black. You won't be able to see it. But there's like a zipper in here. I don't do drugs, but if I did, I'd probably put it in.
It's like, so you can put quarters in there and give somebody a headache.
Yeah, something. To put like some crazy magnets in there and like let my enemies wear this hat. Fry their brains or something.
But I wonder if you could put a thin CCD and like have a little camera pointing out or something.
Oh,
dang. You guys are missing a trick. This podcast seems to be primed for product placement.
I was going to say, I suspected it all along. I think he's looking for a free laptop. He wants some battery.
Dude, I would love that. I would love that. Hey, oh my gosh, Josh, let's get on this. Let's start reaching out to people.
Nice.
Like, we are going to edit you out unless you like hook us up.
Yeah, we've been buying up some Aston Martins at the garage down the road. So. That's
right. Nice. Right on.
Okay, cool.
All right, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's
been a blast.
Right on. Hey, Josh, can you give the audience a heads up on where these guys are from and where this
idea is, number one, like, everyone that's in here has been invited to the Meteor Club Slack chat room, so these kind of conversations, a lot of these come up in the Slack chat room to some degree, and that's where we get a lot of ideas. None of you guys were in there yet, but I sent you invites while we were actually talking, so you know, as always, you can go to patreon.com patreon.com/Meteor Club, and $10 a month you can get in there, and we've got all kinds of amazing people in there talking all the time, so that's awesome. And then I guess where else can people find you guys, Aaron and Justin and Matt?
Yeah, sure. So we're Void Alpha is a game studio. We're located in the San Francisco Bay Area, just across the bridge in Emeryville. Yeah, we're here, and if anybody wants to come by and try out our 3D printer, you just have to give us a handshake and a coffee, and we'll play together.
Nice.
they're pivoting too, I guess, right?
No, we're just playing with anything. Any kind of game, little play pieces or whatever. We actually want to get into robotics, you name it.
I guess we've got a slightly less glamorous location. We're currently working off of Justin's sofa in London in a little apartment. So humble beginnings and all that. But if anyone's in London and wants to meet up and talk Meteor or gaming or anything like that, I'm at Wagerfield, WAGERFIELD, on all platforms, GitHub, Twitter, etc. And Justin, you are?
I'm SoulWire on most things, SoulWire. Moon.co is where you can play the game at the moment.
Nice.
All updates on that.
And our Twitter account for that is moon.co, as in MOONDOTCO. So. Cool. Chat to us in other places.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yes. Nice to meet you soon.
This podcast has been a Meteor Club production. You can find out more information about Meteor Club at meteorjs.club. It's pretty easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. Again, that's meteorjs.club.